We should all have had some annoying thing telling you recording is happening. Okay, so we're probably stable at about 16 participants. The people who I think need to be here are probably here, and obviously, unfortunately, we won't have a number of Atlas associated people because I think Atlas Open Computing is still going on today, which is unfortunate, but this means we can make decisions by other viewers without Atlas's opinion, which might be okay. So the context for this is that obviously we are currently writing the GPP7 project proposal. And as part of that, obviously, when we're writing that document, we have an opportunity to talk about what services we say we provide for the LSTVOs is very obvious, but non-LSTVOs, it isn't quite as obvious what services we need to provide. And also we have an opportunity to think about whether there's anything else we need to change in the proposal while we're writing it. Obviously, there is a time limit for this. For all of you, just so you know, the GPP7 proposal deadline for us to put in is the start of March, so we don't have that much time to tweak stuff, but we should have these technical meetings to give people a chance to talk about these things, both the plan for GPP7 itself, but also so we can make any changes we want to the document. So I think it's fair to admit that Alistair and Matt and I and Alessandra had a quick chat about this earlier on in the year, which is where we got down to the list of three core services I mentioned here, the Dirac and CVMFS and VOMS servers being the important core things that other VOs need us to host. So I think first, I guess, do we have reps representing these different aspects? We have definitely have, so Robert Frank, so we have a person representing VOMS services. I think the others are basically tier one services, right? So
I thought Dirac was Imperial.
Oh, sorry, yes, Dirac Imperial. We have one tier one service and one Imperial service. And of course Imperial is here, so we have that. So
and we also have Tom Dack
to represent
the token future, which
token
is
future, yes. Yes. So, okay. So Chris in the chat notes, yes, other identity management things. So yes, that was a thing we talked about a bit, I think, Matt, when we were having our earlier talk that, yeah, VOMS here is certainly what a lot of people will be wanting to use, but yes, it is quite right that other people might want token services. And yes, now, so the question for FTS is, so, okay. Let's talk about file management stuff then. So my understanding is that for a lot of the non-LSTVOs that aren't big, probably, do they use FTS currently? This is a bit why I'm asking questions, other people can give me opinions.
We do have some, I think T2K uses our FTS server occasionally.
Is that the Imperial FTS?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Imperial, so your FTS.
I think it's the Imperial FTS, but this is just, you know, sort of out of convenience because we just found it easier for debugging. But
I'm not objecting. I'm just being clear that they're using your one, yeah. Not the RAL one.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think. LZ on occasion for they have their own system, but sometimes they have a bit of overflow. But it's all been very low level and very low, very, very low maintenance.
Okay. Matt, you had a hand up.
Yeah, I'm trying to be good. Do the Dirac data management tools just plug, forgive my ignorance here, do they plug into FES sort of? And is that how T2K are using it, or T2K using it ad hoc, do you know?
No, T2K uses it via Dirac, it plugs into Dirac.
Okay, that's So that's because that's something we, you know, it's if people don't go Rusho route, they'll go the direct data management tools route. And so FTS is a thing that we provide. But I think if it just plugs into any standing FTS, it just requires a small level of, yeah, let this VO do stuff. And it feels like it might be not a huge sort of a undertaking to support.
Yeah, I mean, the same with Rusho, right? If you're providing a Rusho front end, then Rusho talks to the FTS for you to some extent. The VO facing bit is the Rusho or the direct service, not the FTS in those cases, right? So obviously we would be maintaining an FTS service anyway, potentially, right? So for larger VOs. So if you're already running an FTS, it's slightly less effort to add additional communities to it. Assuming we were continuing to run an FTS, because of course, obviously, there are many FTSs in the world, and one could argue that you could just run the FTS at CERN. That's what most of the larger experiments tend to do stuff via the CERN FTS above other FTSs. Is that true for CMS now, Katie? What is CMS like? Do they use?
Yeah, we mostly have been using the CERN CMS instance lately, but we do have the RAL one available, and I know Imperial use theirs for transfers to Imperial.
Okay.
And we have the Fermilab one as well, of course.
Yeah. But yeah, so I guess my point is that because there is the big CERN FTS, ironically, it's actually less skin off the nose of the larger VOs if the RAL FTS went away because it just used the CERN one. Whereas for non-ILC VOs, who were dependent on FTS, we would have to continue running it, presumably, because they probably can't use the CERN one, or at least but it would be harder for them to get necessarily the CERN one enabled for them.
Yes, indeed.
And Daniela brought up a good comment of it's a lot easier to debug it when you can just log into it yourself.
Yeah, indeed.
As far as I know, CERN takes other VOs as well, so I don't think it's that much of an issue.
Oh no, it's not that there's much of an issue, it's about what user communities expect to use, right? Because if we have a lot of user communities, I mean, especially because non-ILC VOs aren't always, but quite a lot of them have a lot less technical support than, for example, Atlas and CMS and LCB, it can be harder for them to make changes. So if they were all used to using, for example, the Imperial FTS, say, Daniela, then if we told them it was going away, it would be slightly harder for them in terms of the technical effort to move, to get CERN to support them and move to it, right? Because they have less effort to change things. That's all I'm getting at, right? And I imagine the CERN FTS doesn't want to support every random VO that maybe we want to support in GPP, right? Non-HEP VOs are presumably slightly less supported.
And there's also the incubator VOs we have on using GridPP VO.
Well, exactly, yes. I mean, the GridPP VO, if we expect people using the GridPP VO to use file management services, we need to actually give them data and file management services because it would be rather unreasonable to expect the CERN FTS to handle that. But on the other core things, I mean, I don't think the core things in the discussion that Alice listed are controversial, right? We agree that almost all of the non-ILC VOs use the Imperial Dirac instance. I mean, you have quite a lot of people using it, right, Daniela?
Yes. Well, you know, it comes and goes, but I file a report every 3 months, and it's usually hovers around 9 active communities and not always the same ones.
And are these, talking about our friends and other things that are funded, are these mostly IRIS and SwiftHEP, or do we have people that aren't covered by IRIS and SwiftHEP as projects?
I don't know. For example, Jose just mentioned Snow Plus, which uses the FTS as well, and the Imperial Dirac server. I have no idea who these guys are covered under.
Well, okay. Because there's also an argument about that if we are supporting people nicely with the IRIS VOs, and there's also an argument that part of IRIS could cover some of the support for them.
Yeah, I think the only real true Iris one we have is Euclid, though all the other ones had some, came in through Grid PP.
Okay.
Apart from Snow Plus, and I don't know where they come from.
I don't know if there's some kind of, but the neutrino experiments don't seem to, a lot of them don't seem to be interacting with, because we have Snow Plus and sort of links T2K and Hyper K. And they are, you know, they are reasonably sort of, well, I say active communities, an active Sophie, who is doing stuff.
And I'm going to get to the fact that we have cases where we have exactly one active person who's doing
it. Like Daniel said, nine communities. How does that, it probably might be easier to create to nine users, or less. But say we do have. Traditionally, T2K, Hyper-K, and Snow Plus have been supported because they are a particle physics experiment. I don't think it's high energy, but I don't think they've ever placed any Iris bids because we provided enough support
that they didn't need to.
Yeah, we don't need to, and we've always so maybe we should encourage them or.
We have to be careful. It's a bit political. I mean, Hyper-K might go to Iris. I know that John Hayes has been talking to, I think, Mark Scott here, Imperial, and probably Sophie. But these communities will go wherever they're directed to. So they come from Grid PP because initially they've been told that's where you go.
Yeah, and we might not necessarily want to lose that. So it's kind of
de facto, right? Even if they came through Iris in terms of getting resource allocation, the people that would run the resulting DIRAC and the DIRAC service itself and the people who would run it would probably be Daniela. So I mean the same person providing it, it's more that it would be officially provided under, you know, resource provided for Iris by GridPP rather than provided by GridPP.
So and we'd want a circular argument of GridPP getting hardware money to host said resources.
It's useful as an accounting thing to talk about to vaguely gesture at why there's an Iris in the first place. It's useful as a way of justifying this kind of stuff because if we can justify people under Iris and GridPP, then it depends how we're claiming this.
The other thing is we stake a claim, but yeah, there's. I think we need to. It doesn't happen on neutrino sort of groups, or seem a bit quiet at the moment. We haven't seen a Snow Plus job in a while.
There seems to be again, that's the other problem we're talking about users by in general than our CBOs, right? Quite a lot of them are quite bursty.
Snow Plus, oddly enough, has been very, very active just in Canada. I don't know what they were doing, but Simon and me have just done a major round of debugging, etc. when switching over to AREX because they broke all their Canadian sites. So that they are active, but it doesn't always show up. Even though I thought I saw them running at tier one as well. So
it might just be they haven't been running a tier two. That's why.
Yeah. So okay. they're definitely doing stuff. Same for T2K. I'm sure I've saw. The thing with T2K is because they also seem to have an Hyper-K. They have a big French component, which is obviously also grid-like, and French also quite like Iraq. So I think they're quite keen on this system because you know it's an easy sell to their non-UK partners.
Yes, yeah. Which, you know, is good for us, I guess, in a way, because they're using our stuff as well, and we can claim that. So on CVMFS, which I think is the thing I least well understand who wants. So this is the CVMFS instances, as I understand it, are pretty much all hosted at RAL. What kind of usage do we have of CVMFS amongst the non-LHC BOs?
What do you mean by which kind?
Well, how so?
Which type of science?
So, firstly, I mean, how many people, how many communities do we have roughly using CVMFS who are not other CVOs that are sort of good PPA supported? Is it a lot? Is it a small number?
No, it's a big number. I don't remember now from the top of my head, but more than 10, 20, okay. Something like that. I can tell you very quickly.
But yeah, I mean, that's a good ballpark.
No, because now I'm curious too. 43 registered repositories, not all of them are active. Let's say around 30. So yeah, it's a decent number.
And of those, are they, I mean, I presume most of those repos aren't very big.
There are a couple of them that are larger than the average, but no, they are relatively small, nothing huge.
Okay. So, because I know that, and obviously, coming from the other direction, I know that our Euclid user ended up asking for storage at a number of tier two sites, including Glasgow, because he, for a use case which I would argue is a CVMFS use case, and he had this problem, I think, because you would remember this as well, Daniela, that Euclid actually had some CVMFS repositories in France or something, but he didn't necessarily think he had access to add things to them.
Yes, I think that was basically a workaround for politics.
Yes.
Yeah, I have some memory, yeah.
for a single user, so Mark Holliman didn't want to push it through, you know, it wasn't a technical thing, it was just, he didn't want to upset the status quo, and we figured, you know, because the executable was so small that if we just distribute it around a bit, we can
it's
around this. I mean, this was just pragmatism, not that, you know, we use RHEL CVMFS for other stuff.
Okay.
And it works just fine. But we, in this case, we didn't want to upset anybody, and so we just didn't do it.
And we think that in general, it would be okay to continue to have the RHEL hosted CVMFS. There's no one who has any arguments that it would be nice if we had other CVMFSs elsewhere or anything. Because I mean, presumably these are as a fraction of the CVMFS service, this is a relatively small fraction of your total.
Yeah. So space, right? From my point of view as the service owner, we still have on the server currently 1717. Not 70, sorry, just in case my English is not clear. 17 free terabytes. So we have a lot of space. So space is not an issue. I have no problem with adding more repositories as needed, absolutely. The only question, and here there is a little bit of politics that I don't really want to engage in political discussions, but it's a question that needs to be decided, is what is the domain name for the repositories?
Yeah.
And there is a technical aspect, a very important technical aspect of that question. Because if you use one of the existing domain names, everything is already in place. The client, not only in the UK, is worldwide, are already prepared on the entire grid to have those repositories on the worker nodes, and the authentication infrastructure is in place. Creating new domain names is a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. So, if we reuse one of the existing domain names, then it's trivial. My strong recommendation, unless there is a huge political thing about it, is to keep using .egi.eu. That is, technically speaking, for me, the easiest one.
But yeah, I can see what you're saying as a political discussion, because technically, is this actually a .egi.eu thing? Yeah, okay.
Because every working node on every tier one and tier two around the world has this GIU properly configured. So
I know you don't want to have a political conversation, but to skim the edge of it, do you have any feeling that the EGI would be sad about us doing that?
The opposite. They want the number of repositories to grow at least 3 every year.
So
they want more.
As far as the people whose name we're using is concerned, they would be happy. So it's only about what our branding would want to be.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't have an objection. Does anyone else have an objection on technical or political terms to having all our stuff hosted the EGI.eu domain? No one wants to say anything, Jose. I think I don't have an objection in this meeting. And you know, whether or not Alistair has feelings, that's down to Alistair.
He always has feelings about everything. I'm going to post on the chat an email address. So if anybody has questions, comments, or whatever, or want to know more about it, just write a message to that email address I just posted on the chat.
Great. Moving slightly within CVMS, slightly sideways, the other bit of CVMS we don't talk about as much, and Rob will be sad because this is a bit where I ask him some things, is what they sometimes call large-scale CVMFS or data CVMFS or stash cache sometimes if you're Brian Brockelmanite. So we of course have a stash cache service to make Dune things work up in Edinburgh, and obviously so they're hosting one. Are you hosting any stash cache stuff at RAL, Jose?
No.
Okay.
No.
So we should have.
You mean a stash cache server? No.
Yes. Okay. So have you ever had any requests for such a thing?
It has not been requested formally.
Okay.
I remember the conversation about all of this last year or so. And when internally I mentioned this, pretty much the answer I got is it has to be discussed properly by the right people. Above my pay grade.
Exactly. Whenever you have a conversation, it means that it's never going to happen because the right people are never in the right place at the right time. Yeah, okay.
So nobody has requested it formally to me or to RAL, to my knowledge, and it is not up to me to decide if doing it or not.
Someone
will have to request it probably through Alastair, I guess, but it has to come from high level in GPP. So,
and I mean, how would you feel in the case where, I mean, given that Edinburgh is already running one, how would you feel about stash caches being hosted by non-RAL endpoints? Do you as a service provider for CVMS have any feelings about that?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Can you rephrase it?
Well, so at the moment, there is a stash cache. It's in Edinburgh. Uh-huh. It is serving formally Dune, but Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, you actually have quite a lot of entities that are using it sort of unofficially.
That's the nature of stash cache. It's basically giant XRoot mesh network for distributing larger-ish files and it's the whole source of sending parts of the file versus the whole file, therefore efficient. We get it's mostly Dune traffic. There's a bit of UK traffic from smaller VOs that's, you know, it's nothing significant. I mean, the only comment and sort of point I'll make from our side is it's been fine for the UK. It's taken the load off the only other stash cache instance in the UK, which is the LZ one, which Dune were absolutely knocking into oblivion. It's fine on just a standard, you know, last generation server. The only concern is really bandwidth. So Edinburgh's going to be this will be behind a 10 gig link optimally. But you know, whether this will be enough moving forward, if another community will start to use this in anger. You know, if June suddenly starts submitting millions of jobs to the grid across the UK and pulling a huge amount of data, a single stash cache or a single 10 gig stash cache on the backbone might not be enough.
So in that context, Jose, the point is that de facto we have a stash cache, right, that isn't hosted at, well, and that's fine. But if, for example, we got to the case where Rob notes where we did, for example, have June and potentially other entities wanting stash caches and then springing up outside of RHAL, how would you feel about that? I mean, given that you host, you given that effectively RHAL hosts is the service manager for CVMFS, I'd obviously, if a bunch of things that are CVMFS-y start being hosted outside of RHAL, do you have feelings about that? Would you rather people requested at that point that RHAL should centralize this stuff, or would you, you know?
I don't know. I never gave it a thought. So at this point right now, I don't have an opinion one way or another. Not really.
Okay. So
sorry.
If you have further opinions outside of this meeting, Jose, I'd be interested to know, because obviously there's
a absolutely.
Absolutely. And so similarly, again, I mean, obviously Imperial has their own FTS, right? So there isn't a reason why people shouldn't, although I'm always worried about service fragmentation, and it's fine Imperial having their own FTS, but if every tier two had their own FTS, I think we'd have an issue, right, in terms of people knowing where to talk to apart from anything else. So we need to avoid fragmentation.
Wasn't there also a stash cache server in Cardiff?
So this is what Rob was talking about. So effectively LIGO, the LIGOBIO, has a stash cache explicitly, well, it was intended explicitly for LIGO, which is in Cardiff, because that's where the LIGO compute is in the UK. And what they had not realized was that other people, they had not thought about this, that the fact that other people might use stash cache. And it's because, as Rob notes, stash cache is kind of, you know, its own exciting XFT mesh in the behind the scenes. The reason why we were getting this really bad June performance initially was that June jobs in the UK were entirely reasonably trying to use the LIGO stash cache in Cardiff, and because that is provisioned to be exactly the right size for LIGO's workloads and no more, they were of course getting awful performance, because they were essentially the extra users that didn't get any performance, which is why Rob and Renlong set up the stash cache in Edinburgh to essentially take that load off from June. But it could continue happening, right? And also, I mean, if LIGO services decided to use the grid, not just Cardiff, then we might also want to give them a stash cache that was more integrated with the grid stuff as well, rather than just using Northern Cardiff. It is a bit weird, and it is.
Okay.
I'll maybe just mention that stash cache is probably a bit unique compared to a lot of these services, and thus it's opt out of supporting a VO has been the approach from, because this is obviously more OSG centric. So the default assumption is when you throw this up, it is fine for everybody to be using, which is why we knocked the LIGO one over with June stuff. You know, it was just not set up for the June scale of requests. It'd just be if a new community suddenly come along and start using this service in angst, but
But I mean, it wasn't, was it on the scale of things, Rob, would you say it was, how much admin time and stress does it cause you and Renlong to run the stash cache now it's set up?
To be perfectly honest, it's quite hands-off. So without starting a long conversation about XRoot, it's pulling the OSG XRoot images, which are very finely tuned and looked after by OSG people. And it's pulling a custom stash cache RPM repo again, which stash cache is one of the few things they do deploy and test via RPM quite a lot in OSG across a lot of different sites. So yeah, this has just been completely hands off, you know, once every couple of months, you've just gone in, yum update, restarted. It's been absolutely hands off compared to a lot of other things.
Yeah, okay, and the another
step before a new server has to is usable is that you need to distribute the endpoint to the server to all the CMFS clients, but I do that, so I remember doing it for Cardiff last year. And so from that point of view, it is not too complicated to have distribute endpoints. I don't really see a benefit of having everything aggregated at RHEL with respect to having one or two outside RHEL.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So does anyone else have any comments on CPMFS as a service? Can think of any people that might want to use it or that don't, or any objections, things we could do even more, things we could do better for people using CPMFS? If not, we should move on to the bit that, as Chris noted, is possibly rapidly changing, the VOMS service. So I get mixed messages about VOMs and tokens from different groups, because there are certainly some of non-LCBOs who I think who would really like to just stay on VOMs and don't understand this token thing. And there are some mostly newer non-LCBOs who really would just like to be using tokens right now and don't understand this VOMs thing. So I guess, Rob, you're running the thing, so.
Yeah, well, I think the future of VOMS is actually Indigo IAM.
Okay.
Because you also have the VOMS endpoint for it.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, you can just use the web interface to manage your users and then have the VOMS connectors in the back end to just use your grid certificate and VOMS attribute certificate with it.
Okay. And
that's also that we would, I actually would like to move to at some point, is that we just have an Indigo IAM server or multiple, depending on technical implementation details. And then just having the VOMS endpoints in there and just get rid of the existing VOMS, because I think support for VOMS itself will go down. Mm-hmm. Because the Italian people don't really have any interest in it anymore. They're just concentrating on Indigo IAMs now.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be harder and harder to get things like bug fixes and security patches and things like that for, or even newer versions for new operating systems.
Yeah, the common problem. Anyone running a DPM knows this well. So I mean, what timescale are you thinking though? Because if it's so good, GPT 7 starts in March 2024. So would you see there still being VOM servers around in 2024? Presumably we're not going to get rid of them in a year.
No, it will still be around, but we should try to aim to get rid of it within 2 years or so.
Okay, so you would see an early GPT 7 milestone being migrating the GPT VOM stuff to Indigo IAM.
That would be actually a good thing, I think.
Okay. So this is the thing. Because we can also add this kind of stuff to, right. I mean, I have to write a project management plan, GPT 7. If I have milestones that we want to add, like doing this, I can add those. So if you think that would be a thing that we should add to our project milestones, GPT 7, I can add them and we can consider how we'd migrate to the Indigo IAM. I assume there's a reasonable migration path.
Well, it depends on technical details, because at the moment I don't know how the VOMS endpoints fit into the IAM instances.
Okay.
So at the moment it's unclear whether you, for each IAM instance, you can have multiple VOMS endpoints or just one.
Right. Okay.
So at the moment each VO has its own VOMS endpoint.
Yes.
So if you can have multiple VOMS endpoints with one IAM instance, you can get away of moving all existing VOs to one IAM instance.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have only have one VOMS endpoint to IAM instance, you either have to use multiple IAM instances or just get all of the VOs to change all of their VOMS configurations.
Yeah. I don't know. And we have both the Toms. You might know something about this from Mel. I don't know that either of the Toms have any thoughts about this on a tokeny level.
I might be mistaken, but I believe with the current Indigo IAM integrations being one Indigo IAM instance per the four experiment VOs, each one of them has their own individual VOMS endpoint rather than. I'm not sure how it works for smaller VOs, and I'm not sure what the plans there are, but so far the format has been that, for example, where, for example, you substitute an experiment with an Atlas, and that would get you to the Atlas IAM instance and the Atlas VOMS endpoint for the IAM instance.
And they are actually separate endpoints, which, as you say, might be for load management or other reasons, not because they have to be, but we don't know. Yeah. Okay.
So it feels like we might want a BPP or web dot, probably not cern.ch.
yeah, or whatever the host is.
And
just to add in a bit from the grid side, you know, Val, we're still very much looking at the best way to implement tokens on our gridware, Condor and CE. Having the differentiation of the IAM endpoints does allow you to be very granular with the mappings when it comes down to endpoint that IAM is calling, and then you know, mapping that to an internal POSIX user, for example, means you don't have to do any querying of potential tokens that has the potential of changing in the future. So you can just do an endpoint map from there, and it's relatively simple. So from an administration point of view, it's nice to have an endpoint per VO.
Yeah.
Perfect world and all that.
Yeah. When you are dealing with the tokens themselves. Yeah. Okay.
But you're talking about the IAM endpoint or the VOMS endpoint.
Sorry, does that question, I'll just take a second to answer that one. Realistically, both.
Okay. So one IAM endpoint per VO and one VOMS endpoint per VO.
Yeah. But, you know, that's it's not a requirement. It can work if there is different ones. But yeah.
So I think at the moment it looks like the Iris IAM server is just one endpoint, so one instance. It shows all the VOs as subgroups.
Yes, that's how Iris manages it, but I don't like WOCG's model is, rather than having a multi-tenancy IAM instance, they've having an IAM instance per VOs. As I said, I'm not 100% on what the plan is for the non-Atlas CMS LHUB Alice VOs are. I'm assuming it would be, that's the stage they're at. They have the testing WOCG auth instance as well.
Yeah, I wonder if you can have some sort of multi-strategy approach for this, that for the very small ones, we just host them all on the same BPP IAM instance, and the slightly bigger ones get their own IAM instance.
I think the plan is to have the smaller VOs on a shared instance that's probably going to be ran by INFN. I'm not sure if that's moving to being hosted on CERN infrastructure like the four larger ones, but I don't have an up-to-date answer on that one. The authorization working call is this afternoon, and so if there's questions people want,
it's still moving. Yes. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, if people do have questions, then ask them along to Tom.
Also, people are welcome to come along to the authorization working group if they want to ask more in-depth questions.
I would, but my afternoons are terrible this semester. But no, I mean, it would be good to have people come along and know more about this, because it does look like we are going to have to, in GPP7, have a campaign to migrate stuff from VOMS to Indigo IAM. So it would be good to have a full understanding of exactly what we're going to do before we do it. Okay. But since it is backwards compatibility, I'm less worried about the migration, I guess. So does anyone else have thoughts or comments on identity management services and what non-NFC VOs need from it? I mean, in quite a lot of cases, I note that we also, a lot of non-NFC VOs have like one user. So it's the most trivial kind of identity management.
Well, I think from it's one proper user and then it's sort of trying to do this job submission and stuff. But is usually if a large number of users trying to access data, that's when it gets tricky, because that's our experience with Hyper-K and TGK is it's really only whoever has the unlucky hat of job submission is doing the actual work. But we have a few people trying to access data, and if they have trouble, they're usually people in the building as well, which is always worrying because they can come and poke you in person. So there's I think the most important thing is for us to gain experience in this area.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one could also argue that job submission and certificates, if they're going through something like DOAC, right? You should probably have an automated service for doing that. You shouldn't be a personal certificate, but I understand the reasons why people have personal certificates for doing this kind of thing. So yes, there's a side issue about identity management. Okay, so Chris also brought up FTS. We had a bit of discussion about it at the start. I don't think we imagine anything magical happening to FTS, right? It's still FTS, unless there has been any discussion at RAL about the usage of your FTS server. So I see we have LHTTP and Atlas wraps here now. I put Katie on the spot very much early on in this meeting and asked how much CMS, as an example of a large LHTTP VO, cares about there being an FTS at RAL. I don't know if there's a Atlas and LHTTP feeling about this. I mean, if the FTS at RAL vanished, how much would it affect Atlas or LHTTP? Because presumably you could use the CERN one.
I mean, for Atlas, we use CERN and we use BNL. And on the occasions where CERN have taken their FTS down for extended periods, the BNL service has just coped, I think. And I mean, BNL, I think, have put extra resources into that. So I think from that sense, you know, there's at least one layer of redundancy. So it's not really a concern at this point.
Okay. And
for LHTTP, right now only CERN FTS is used for a long time, actually. So no effect should be observed.
Okay. So I am not saying, by the way, RAL should get rid of the FTS, but I am testing a feeling I had that actually, ironically, it is mostly the non-LHTTP VOs that care about an FTS at RAL specifically, because the large LHTTP VOs have multiple and tend to be kind of vaguely consolidating around the CERN one, right? So,
Sam?
Yes.
With the CMSs particularly, I think we were finding that we needed like up to the minute updates on, you know, new features and things from FTS. So that's why we moved everything more or less to CERN FTS. Before that, we were using RAL FTS just to sort of spread the load a little bit, but whether that's necessary, probably not.
Oh yeah,
good to know it's there.
Well, I'm not saying we should get rid of it. I'm just, it's interesting to see the space of who of what people use, right? And again, it's interesting to note that whilst I'm sure the experiments appreciate the RAL FTS being there, the bigger ones could probably cope without it.
Yeah, well, as James said, sometimes goes down, and then you want something to do it as a backup.
And
then
you want a backup. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the other point, I mean, certainly from what Katie was, you know, what Katie was saying, that was one of the reasons that motivated the move away from RAL at the time, and there was a huge sort of pace of web app development.
Because you wanted all the cool features, yeah.
Yeah, well, the features that weren't yet there and even developed. But the other reason, I mean, the FTS instances are still independent instances, even, you know, even the CERN FTS for Atlas and the BNL FTS.
They don't coordinate.
They don't, yeah. So having as much coordination as possible is useful. But again, with multi-VO type situations at single sites, that's still an issue, even with, you know, multiple FTS instances. But that's a wider topic.
Yeah. But and I think we decided there were a number of non-LLCVOs that do either use the Imperial FTS or the VAL FTS. So I guess we do have to provide an FTS service for non-LLCVOs. And the question is, of course, would be where we would provide it, or if we provide it in multiple places. Because, I mean, how many users did you say, Daniela, you had VOs that were using the Imperial one?
What, the FTS?
Yeah.
I think we currently only have, apart from we use it for CMS, LZ, and T2K, and maybe RPK.
And in terms of load, does it do a lot of transfers, or?
T2K, yes, can. I mean, it's bursty, but we get a couple of 100,000 files occasionally.
Okay. That is a reasonably significant service if you're moving a couple of 100,000 files around. So I think there's definitely a need for an FTS. We need to discuss what need there is, I think, probably in another context. I guess moving on to the other thing that Luke suggested, so the Rusio service, there is a VAL hosted Rusio service that supports entities that are non-LHC, right? Although it's kind of in testing. I may be speaking for Tim here, who I know has been organizing it. Does anyone from VAL want to make a statement about the Rusio service at VAL?
I'm not an expert. I thought Tim was going to be here, but my understanding is that is correct, what you just said.
Okay.
But not 100% sure.
Okay. And then this should integrate with the Dirac instance at Imperial, right? They should be able to talk to each other.
It can, but the thing is, we haven't had a real use case yet.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to get LZ to go and use Rusio, but they were adamant they didn't want to. And since then, we somehow, we'll wait until we have an actual use case rather mm-hmm. than, doing anything preemptively.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, so I guess from the other side, does anyone know of any non-LCVOs that care deeply about Rusio as a service existing for them?
SKA, presumably.
Yeah, okay. So SKA cares about Rusio, and we need to provide a Rusio instance for them. Are they, what's the many people who are SKA involved? SKA's plan is to use Rusio for data management, but for job management, are they also planning in the UK of going through the Dirac instance, or do they have their own plans for that?
No, they have their own plans. So,
okay.
SKA is too big. They get a huge amount of funding to develop their own infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is a grid PP issue anymore beyond, hardware support or so, but they develop their own infrastructure.
Okay, but they might be interested in a Rusio instance hosted by us for...
I think they host their own Rusio instances, okay, as far as I'm aware.
Okay, so from our perspective, we wouldn't need to host anything for them.
No, I think even most of the hardware they use, it goes through Iris, because it's, it's high memory, high something, high this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there would be Iris supported services if they were supported by anything, which doesn't mean that people in this meeting wouldn't be necessarily running them, right? But they would be badged differently.
Yeah, it feels like they've gone and built their own infrastructure with Blackjack. Because I remember we had a bunch of, we bought a selection of high memory nodes at Lancaster, but the jobs never came that were supposed to use them. So it feels like SKA might share some KU technologies, but they're very, I can't see us other than maybe, like you say, sharing some, having hardware at the same physical site, not organizational site. I think we might not need to support them. If that makes sense. They're keeping in touch quite well. Mm-hmm. At least some members are, and sharing technologies, but they're more comrades in arms rather than people will be supporting.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's good to know, but also it's in a sense good to know because we can strike one thing off, things we have to provide resources to support by the community. Are there any other communities that have needs that we haven't talked about yet? I think that's the main core things, right? A job management service and CVMFS and some kind of identity management service, and then potentially FTS and Rusio, right? There's no other things that we're missing that non-LCVOs desperately expect QuidPP to provide for them. I mean, other than obviously CEs and SEs at sites, but that doesn't count. This is core services. Okay, so in this space of time we have available, and I know we're almost at the hour, there is a topic that I also want to talk about, which is important, which is talk about actually how do we feel that the non-LCVO support is at the moment, and is there stuff we could do better? So in particular, Alistair had a note noting that at the moment, for example, quite a lot of the non-LCVO support story for each VO tends to be one person heroically in VPP takes ownership of that VO and does a lot of effort to support them. I mean, for example, like Euclid would not have worked, the Giuseppe stuff wouldn't have worked without Daniela, Di Malfo would have worked, and also pushing like me and Dan and other people at other institutes to get things to work, integrating with us, right? So it worked because Daniela didn't work. Is this okay? Can we do things better? Can we think about how we might evolve things in GPP7? People can suggest things, whether they think it works okay or not, and what they would like to move to if they don't.
I think this, because at the moment, I say it seems to be a Batman and Robin kind of we have someone from GPP, often Daniela, sort of hoisting a lot of work, and then you also have someone keen from the organization themselves, usually just one person who puts in the work that side, and then you, and this on top of everything else creates one horrible bus factor.
Yes, it's
very, especially as an often a lot of churn. We've seen it with T2K and stuff in the and in the past, where they've had fallow periods because the baton's not been passed on properly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the bus factor at Imperial is at least two, because there's Simon and me.
They just never share the same transport.
We occasionally go to the pub together, which is
probably, oh no,
a risk activity. But the thing is, I don't know if there's, I mean, we do encourage people, for example, if they have a direct question, to mail it to the mailing list so that, you know, when we provide an answer, everybody can see it. But I'm not sure how much wider we need to spread this, as long as every VO, you know, has somebody they feel confident to talk to. If that person can't handle it, they should just, you know, go back to TB support and say, like, look, guys, I have this person here. I can't do it right now. Can somebody else do it? But otherwise, it doesn't happen all that often, right? I think it's easier if it's not spread too much.
I mean, yeah, no, I see your point. On the other hand, are the VOs happy with this? That they essentially, it's the people they can't be handled, they go to TV support? I mean, I think most of the VOs know about TV support, right? Except, are we missing VOs that we don't know about that need support because they don't know about TV support and they don't know who to talk to? Because it's sort of dependent upon the initial setup of handshaking the non-LHC VO to the person that supports them. And obviously, we're lucky we have a lot of people who do put a lot of effort in, but is there anything we can do to make this more failure tolerant or avoid any potential complications where there isn't someone, a single person? Or to avoid there needing to be one heroic person on the VO side who needs to do lots of work, right?
I think that latter point requires a cultural shift among most physics groups and their computing requirements. I think that might be beyond our remit.
I'm just thinking, you know, is there anything, well, we can't change their internal policy, but is there any way we can, I don't know, make it require less of a person, at least, even if they do have one person who does it?
I think the only way forward would be to, I don't think you can easily make for work less. I think this has been reasonably streamlined. Evelyn just learning from each experience, and we could equip more people to be able to provide the same level of support, but that requires a lot of effort at the start. And
yeah,
and at the same time, Daniela and Simon are in this wonderful strategic position to
quite indeed, yeah,
to look at stuff.
I mean, as Dan notes, one thing we could do is to clearly set expectations for what the minimal requirement that small VOs get is, which might help at least set expectations in both directions. Because I mean, if we're saying we're going to provide TMFS to everyone if they want it, then...
Do we have a easily accessible TMFS area a gripp.egi.eu CFMS area?
Jose, do we?
Like kind of like an umbrella repository or something like that?
Yeah, just an introductory repository that people can easily get access to, or at very least easily have stuff uploaded to. That we can say, okay, that's the easiest, because we've from Euclid fell into the problem of having to spread its data binaries around the place. So if we could avoid that bottleneck, that was, I think, one of the biggest pitfalls of the Euclid experience was.
Yeah, I mean, for all that it was political underlining, yes, we could have solved it with a technical thing of sticking their stuff in a GridPP repo that we owned.
Just something that's mounted everywhere that we can easily upload, either have user access to it or something we can upload on their behalf with minimum effort.
I understand. So right now under the EGA.eu, I don't remember. I don't think we have any kind of like a generic multi-purpose repository. There is a little bit of an issue with that. Which is that if one particular collaboration / experiment start using it just to try and see how it goes and to test the technology, so they use something like let's call it gripp.egi.eu, and they use it and they like it, and then they decide that they want to use their own separate repository. Then all the software has to change to get the binaries or the libraries from the new repository instead of the previous one. So I have seen that in the past when I was in Open Science Grid. People are starting with catch-up umbrella repository, then wanted to have their own one, and they had to change all the names, all the paths, problems with a non-relocatable software. So there is a little bit of issue with that. Now, from my point of view, I have no problem of creating one and giving access to people to this particular catch-up multi-purpose repository or dedicated repository is the same. There is no difference. It's not one easier or more difficult than the other. So I can create one, but people need to think carefully if they want to use it and for how long. That's it.
And I mean, again, as you say, I mean, we probably have to emphasize to people that it is indeed like the view itself, a onboarding CMS repo, not a you should use this for testing and arranging your plan, not for everything. Right. Yeah. Communication is important for this. Okay. That's an interesting thought. Does anyone else have any thoughts about things we could do differently or the same? I do note that I believe there is what, half an FTE for other VO support liaison stuff as well currently in GPT6. So technically, we have some support in.
You had to ask Alastair about that.
Yes, this is. But Alastair, when he's listening to this recording, I do note that that Val does actually have some FTE allegedly funded to do this. Right. So. Anyway, yeah, Chris, you had a thought.
Yeah, I was going to say the problem of transferring data between sort of HPC sites seems to come up, and I suspect it doesn't fit within the GridPP context. But if so running something like FDS might potentially be useful for other communities as well, so I just thought I'd throw that in there as a thought.
So, I mean, people are leaving now, but this is we can have a chat on this for the record. I couldn't make the network research engineering meeting last Friday because every Friday, my afternoons now are full of doing lab demo stuff, teaching things. But was there a lot of interest from people from FTS as a solution to this? And what do you feel that interest would be?
The continued theme, I think we mentioned it on Tuesday, was how's this different from Globus? So other groups might just use Globus, but this is a thing that's come up. It was in one of the LSST Slacks, the UK Slacks morning. George came up with the moving data around. It's a thing we're going to have to do. So if we could provide something, it would be a good feather in our cap.
From that perspective, this is Rusio. This is Ruben, right? What's Ruben's status in terms of support? Are they an Iris VO?
They are an Iris. Yeah, they are an Iris organization. LSST. Well, via LSSTC, I think
So as far as how this would work, probably they would ask for the resource via Iris, but probably that Iris would ask us to give them access to our FTS.
Yeah, that's if they go. I think they're still if looking they that way. Yeah. Some point at it. It's a thing. It's a problem that people have mainly because it's transferring from stuff that isn't. That's going to be on a modern equivalent of a wet piece of string because it's an HPC outgoing.
Yeah, they have poor bandwidth, so you need something to actually manage the transfers.
Yeah, appropriately. It's probably more bandwidth than we ever had when we had wet pieces of string, but it's 10 gig links, but it's still.
HPC sites tend not to care that much about having really fast connections because all their traffic is internal.
But that leads to the, there's a bit of a chicken and egg here, isn't there, in that, it's difficult to transfer lots of data, therefore our workflows will avoid us transferring lots of data. One answer of how it differs from Globus is how many thousands of pounds it costs to buy Globus.
Compared to
Globus, the other interest
interesting thing might be to transfer it. I'm not sure. It would be nice if the facility to transfer lots of data between big-ish HPC centers and I include GridPP, high performance, high throughput, big facilities. Whether that sits within the GridPP remit is a slightly different question, but I think there's an interesting technical I'll perhaps follow up privately with Sam.
It would be good to follow up
because it was quite interesting.
I think from a GridPP perspective, right, obviously we could commit to supporting this kind of thing for GridPP VOs, and obviously if Iris VOs talks to us about it, then obviously we have a relationship with Iris and with SwiftHappers projects, so we could. The question would always be for things outside of that, how we would do that, which becomes the bit where it becomes exciting and, both political and otherwise about how you provide things and who is expected to provide things, etc. But obviously it is good for GPP, obviously, as to be able to say that we are supporting helping a bunch of other people, but also if it ended up that this took over all of our FTS resources and harmed our primary customers, that would be bad. So there's always this trade-off, right? That's why we've always had this 10% ballpark for non-LHC VOs who aren't IRIS members getting resource. But we could talk about it. It would be an interesting thing to talk about.
From what I understand, the problem is there is data that needs to be moved. Yes. So it's I don't know the time frames, but it's not just
running an orchestration service like an FTS isn't a huge amount of resource in terms of the data movement, though, because it's orchestrating transfers between endpoints. So if the endpoints are owned by non-GPP entities and they're just using our FTS to orchestrate the transfers, we don't really see that bandwidth. We just see the overhead of making sure we keep the FTS up and it's reliable. That's why we have third-party companies. We should talk about this offline.
I'm going to GridPP, so if we don't set up a meeting
before, then we'll talk about it then. Yeah. No. Well, I note that Alice has also asked if people are interested in Virgin of Heather sessions. So if you think this is interesting enough, Chris, to get together people to have a chat about it, then we could suggest to Alice do a Virgin of Heather on this kind of a thing.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, it might be actually.
Yeah. You know, I think to bear in mind, because obviously the SwiftHap people will also be there, so there might be other interests from them. Last minute comments from people.
I think something that might be a good and really, really horrible thing for us to do is probably a document review.
We should do a document review.
A big audit of our documentation.
We need to assign someone to do a document review.
First we need to assess how much of a terrible, horrible task
that is part of the review. Part of the review is determining the scope of the review, right?
And then we just need to review whether or not it's fit for purpose.
We should make a note for that. But we should do that before GPP 7.
Yes.
So technically, that is not a GPP 7 support.
That's a GPP 6 closing.
GPP 6 support requirement. Though we should do that. Yes.
We'll see how it goes. We might volunteer ourselves at Lancaster for that.
That's very generous of you, Matt.
I apologize if that's Gerard and Stephen. I've got me around to Gerard and Stephen's fairly fresh eyes. so between the three of us, we might be able to do stuff, but I'm not gonna guarantee you. I'll just tentatively we'll have a chat about it locally, and then hopefully we'll reach a plateau of jobs that way in the next few months.
Okay, on that suggestion, I'm coming up to time. I think we're going to lose more people. So this has been a useful meeting. I think, for people. I have a better understanding of stuff, and we have a recording other people can see, and things will come out of it. Further topics on this, obviously, we can discuss in various venues, but now you kind of know the kind of feeling of what we're talking about, feel free to suggest any thoughts that come to you about support. Outside of that, with a note that obviously anything goes into CCP7 planning wise, it is being written right now. So let us know now. Right. So I will let you all go. We're already losing Tom's. So cheers, everyone. And the next technical meeting next week will be the token transition one, I think. So we'll probably have more conversations about IAM services at that point. Right. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Cheers, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. Bye.
Bye-bye.